welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we've taken a little train trip up north to the Paddle Club in Wilmslow. I'm meeting a man who's got it all going on. A director, a fellow podcaster, and a co-founder of Food for Thought. He's also a fellow paddle player. So I thought that it would be rude not to take a stroll courtside. Scott Thomas, welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
What an introduction, keep talking. I like it. It's my pleasure. I really like the concept and the fact that you brought me to my new home, the Paddle Club. I'm just gassed.
You've spent quite a bit of time here recently.
Yeah, we actually call ourselves paddle addicts. I don't know if that's a good word or not. We discovered this sport at the start of this year, and it's just our newfound love. We all say that we'd probably be lost without it because me and my boys were all like big ex-party boys. So this is the one thing that keeps us on track. And out of trouble.
Yeah. Are you sort of early riser when it comes to the paddle, or does it differentiate, or is there a schedule of the addict club?
To be honest, you can't get a game most days. So you just take what you can take. But yeah, we're in it at 7 o'clock in the morning some days. If I can get one in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I will. So I'll play at any time. We've got a WhatsApp group, right?
Yeah.
So if someone pings in a game, if I can make it, I'm there.
You're there.
And I used to do 3 games a day.
That's a lot.
But they put a cap on us now.
Oh.
We can only do 2 games a day now because some people are taking the piss, basically.
That is a lot of paddle. That's 3 hours worth of paddle. But let's get back to the start and the reason for why you love this game so much. Talk to me about sobriety, because a lot has changed in your life last few years.
Yeah, so basically, I think sobriety now is essentially my superpower, because for about 10 years in my 20s, I used to throw parties for a living. I was a professional party boy, and that involved hosting nightclub events in Manchester, London, Ibiza, Marbella, and I was the Scottish special. I was the craziest guy in the room, and that's how I made a living.
What are you talking? When we say crazy, bear in mind I was an athlete.
Well, put it
straight. Take me to crazy, Scott.
So if you speak to Wayne Lineker, it's a true story. You go up to him in Ocean Beach and you say to him, who set the record for getting chucked out of Ocean Beach the most in one day? That's me. For some reason, that is my claim to fame with Wayne. He loves reminding me that no one has ever been chucked out of Ocean Beach as much as me. But I used to get thrown out of my own nights all the time. Not for being aggressive or an idiot. Well, no, for being an idiot, but just for ballooning around, jumping on tables, just taking the craziness a step too far.
To a new level.
Yeah.
I think you would have fitted in well to an extreme sports vibe, you know?
Yeah. I'm pretty much all or nothing. I've never had much balance in my life. And I think that's kind of why I took the party into a new level.
Okay, so you've had this crazy period of time.
Yeah.
What was it that made you take that decision to say, this is enough?
So basically, it was quite cool when I was younger. I was living this rock star life, and we used to have like big names turn up to our parties, like Justin Bieber, LeBron James, and it was all very glamorous, and I loved it. But as I got a little bit older, I started to think, I'm not reaching my potential, and I almost felt trapped in this kind of lifestyle. Like literally, all we knew when it came to socializing was going out. I think my generation, like, were just wrapped up in, if it was your birthday, you go out and get drunk. If it's a social event, you're getting drunk. Whatever the excuse, it was just all about drinking. And for some reason, I felt like I couldn't break out of it. And I used to get myself into a lot of trouble in terms of, I used to upset a lot of people. I had no filter. I'm quite a nice guy, I would say, when I'm sober. But when I was drunk, I could upset a lot of people socially. And it didn't really affect my life until I got into business. So then I launched my businesses, Social PR. It was doing really well. But I started to get some big clients and everything else. And what I started to realize is, going missing for 2 days or getting drunk at a client's event, it was affecting my potential. And one thing that's more important to me than anything else is success. I want to be successful. I want to reach my potential, right? Yeah. I don't know what it is. I'm just so driven in life to get to the top of whatever it is I'm doing. And there was one time when I got chucked out of a big work event for being too drunk. And I nearly lost my biggest client. I nearly lost my team and my relationship with my business partner at the time, because they were all like, Scott, like, you're affecting like the business now. And that was a big wake-up call for me. And I was at rock bottom. I was like, I've pissed people off in my life. And I know I've been a bit of an idiot when I'm drunk. But when it comes to my business and my success, like, nothing can get in the way of that. So that's when I made the decision to go sober for 12 months. It was a very difficult decision at the time because I had to break away from everything I ever knew. But it was life-changing.
That is huge. Like, that commitment to 12 months. Talk to me about that period of being rock bottom? Because that's an extravagant word.
Yeah, so basically, I was in such a dark place because I knew I could lose everything. And it sounds dramatic because it was just one work of it, but it wasn't that. It was the fact that everybody's relationship to me, it was always my chink in my armor. Like I was, it was always like, Scott's a nice guy, but when he's drunk. Yeah. And it was like, it was something that would get me down all the time. And this work event was the first time where it just felt like everyone was against me. And the fact that I could lose my business that I worked so hard for was really difficult. So I had this holiday booked in Abu Dhabi and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go on my own. So I went over there and I remember I had these panic attacks. I was like really anxious because my business partner at the time, she didn't want to work with me. She was basically telling me this is pretty much the end. And I had to basically walk up and down this beach over and over again. I kept listening to Denzel Washington and he kept saying, to achieve something you never had, you have to do something you never done. Okay. And I knew that I tried to go sober before for like a month or even like 2 months or whatever. But I thought, in order to change my life, I need to do something drastic. So I had this pebble in my hand. Sounds very cheesy, but I wanted to remember the feeling. I had this pebble in my hand and went, right. I walked into the sea and I went, this is it. I'm going to do 12 months.
Wow.
And I knew it. I knew exactly when I said it, I was going to do it. It just got to that breaking point for me where I knew if I didn't do it, I wouldn't reach my potential. And I still got that pebble now. Literally in the space of 6 months, I changed my whole life. Literally, just like that. I got in the best shape of my life. I ended up taking over my business, social power from the business partner that I was worried about. I ended up launching Food for Thoughts, which is now my wellness brand. And I became a bit of an inspiration to people because I started talking about it because I knew that was my destiny to start sort of inspiring other people to take the same step. In the space of 6 months, my life just U-turned.
It's mad. And with a U-turn like that comes change massively on a social level. Did you find the people that you were surrounded by, you sort of had to shake off, or did they support that decision? Because I believe that's when you truly find out who your friends are.
Yeah, it was difficult at first because that's all I knew. Even with my brothers, like we all drank together, we all partied to the point, like to be fair though, even my brothers didn't really want to drink with me anymore. And my closest friends.
So you took it to a totally new level.
Yeah, do you know what it was, right? In all fairness, I could be a nightmare when I drank. But it wasn't the fact that I was that bad. It's the fact that I was so different to who I am now when I'm sober. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I look back and go, I didn't do anything that bad. But it was the fact that people didn't really recognise me because I would become the Scottish special. I was so different when I drank. And I think that's what the problem was. So I was already pushing away the people that I love. So when I did make this decision, they were kind of relieved as well. But then, like, obviously, my closest friends who I went out with on a regular basis, they respected the decision. It was difficult because it meant I was alone a lot and I had to spend a lot of time with my own thoughts, getting to know myself. And I think that's the most difficult thing because when you're drinking, a lot of the time you're running away from yourself or you're escaping. And my therapist, because I've seen a therapist for years, he said, you really need to get comfortable in your own skin and that's going to be your superpower. Because I used to finish work and have to drive somewhere else, to my friend's house, to my family's house. I didn't want to be on my own. Never want to be on my own. Whereas now, if I'm honest, I'm happiest when I'm on my own, which is mad. And that's a credit to how comfortable I am. But I think that was the most difficult bit. And yes, you spend a little bit of time on your own because you're breaking away from the crowds. But very quickly, you start to attract different people into your life, right? The right people into your life. Yeah. Doing things like playing paddle, going to like certain gym classes and whatever else. You start to attract the right people. And then the best feeling ever is all those people that you have to leave behind, they end up coming back around now and they're on the sober journey with me. And like some of my best friends have been through the same journey now. And it's that you end up sort of being an inspiration to those people around you as well.
That's so incredible to hear. Talk to me about the friends and the journey with that, because I'm a very, very big believer that you are a product of your environment and the people you surround yourself by. Who's your gang? Who's in the Paddle Addicts? And how do you keep lifting each other?
Oh, it's amazing. So we've got WhatsApp groups now. And to be honest, I don't like WhatsApp groups. I don't like being in the lads groups because I think sometimes it's just a lot to keep track of, especially when you work and stuff. But the Paddle one is the only one that I live and breathe for. And it's so good to see how it brings so many different people together. Like, I don't know, the older generation, like you've got some of the old party boys in there, you've got businesses. So everyone is just brought together. I think it's just something that we all look forward to. Like we look forward to a night out. It's the only thing that keeps me in on a Saturday night. And I'm so gassed for a Sunday morning because it just gets me pumped. And I've always said, like, I find it difficult to find that same, not escape, but that same thrill I used to get from partying, right? Yeah. It's really difficult to find that. But Paddle gives me that. It's the only thing that I can do for 90 minutes and totally forget about work, forget about stress. And I think that's what alcohol used to do for me. It used to make me escape life and paddle is pretty much that, but it's so much more healthy and it's collaborative as well. Look, you see like two against two, and it doesn't matter who you're playing with, you just get that natural buzz, which is I think everyone's looking for.
So we're at the Paddle Club in Manchester today, but originally your heritage isn't British. Talk to me a little bit about Manx in Mumbai.
Wow, so that was one of the best experiences of my life. For me and my two brothers and my dad to go all the way to India and discover the fact that we've got literally a massive Indian family was crazy, because we always knew that we were mixed race, right? And our dad wasn't always in our life and we never really knew too much about our heritage. But obviously when my dad came back into our life, he told us that our granddad was like fully Indian and was like, wow. Like,
but that's wild.
It's mad. And my dad was like a soul singer, had an afro. We were always a bit confused. ITV basically approached us about doing a show and we came up with the concept of doing something in India, going back, tracing our roots. And it got commissioned for ITV1, which was crazy.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge at the time.
I remember it. And, I watched it with my mum.
Yeah, and we literally went back over there. We thought, you know what, it's just going to be a TV show. We might find a long distant cousin, whatever else. But no, we found like direct family, my dad's cousins. We went to his granddad's house. We sat outside it. We were in the slums. We've got a WhatsApp group now with all the Indian family. It was just incredible. But the most incredible part was being able to spend that trip with our dad, because we knew it was probably going to be my dad's last trip. He was getting a bit older. If I'm honest, if I'm completely honest, he didn't really want to be here anymore. My dad, he was just kind of done with life.
Was that hard?
Yeah, it was hard. He was like, I'm done now, son. I've had a great life. And I was like, well, what about us? Do you know what I mean? Because, and all the grandkids that he had. But for me, my dad was one of those free spirits. He liked to be on the move all the time. And he was like to be out riding his horses. And he was 70, only 71, but he was a bit of an old 71. He couldn't really get about as much. And he was just happy to go, really. So we knew that was going to be his last trip. And it was just hilarious and a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Send him off with a bang.
Exactly that.
How have you dealt with that grief? Because I can't imagine that was an easy task to undertake.
It was really difficult. I ended up finding my dad. My dad was living with me at the time. He lived with me for 6 months. Best 6 months I've ever had, because we got so close. And I was at work one day and my cleaner basically found him on the sofa. And then I ended up coming back, but luckily my twin brother Adam was there before me. And then our Ryan was here as well, which is mad because he's never here. So there's all three of us there together and we found him. And it was just, you know what, it was horrible, like really horrible. But I was kind of at peace with it because I kind of knew that he was at peace with it and that's what he wanted. But for me, for anyone who's lost a relative or a mum or a dad, I always just say that they live on through us, like they really do. We get all of our charisma and that show business element of our lives from our dad, because he was just the ultimate showman. So he lives on through us now, and I know he'd be very proud of us. And yeah.
Too damn right.
Yeah.
Sobriety, it's huge. Is that your coping mechanism, living through for him?
I wouldn't say that, because my dad he was a big drinker himself in his day, but he always said to me, Scott, drinking, it's no good for you. Don't suit yourself. But I'm buzzing because I went sober when he was living with me for the six months and I got in great shape, and my dad used to always call me the body. Do you know what I mean? When I finally got in great shape, I would never have my top on. I was just always walking around the house like this.
Is this our cue to take our tops off?
Well, not in a minute, I'm not in peak condition. But he used to always
call me. Had a kebab last night, right?
Yeah, he used to call me the body. So my dad actually got to see me at my best night. And I turned around to my dad one day. I was like, Dad, are you proud of me? Oh, and my dad could never say it. He could never say it. It was weird. And he just went, I think you take too much on, son. Because I was always like running around the house, like on calls and this and that. And to be fair, there's a lot of things that I took from my dad. But the one thing I take from my dad is the quote, life's a game. He used to say to me, life's a game, son. And I went, you know what? I didn't really get it at the time, but now I get it. There's just different levels to life and you've just got to kind of treat it like a game and not get too emotional, especially when it comes to business and stuff, which is easier said than done. But yeah, my dad's lived life to the fullest, so he lives on through us for sure.
You've got a podcast, and in your podcast, you talk about different coping mechanisms in business. But as we're on the topic of grief, how did you, as a unit, as a family, cope with that loss?
I think we were just there for each other. Me and my brothers are so close. I think it's just about surrounding yourself with the people that you care about the most, and just talking as well. I think us as Thomas brothers, we're all really good at talking. And I think that's the key. And I think that's how and why I set up my podcast, because vulnerability is also a superpower. Yeah. Not only are you helping yourself and unloading, you're also helping other people as well. And I think me and my brothers, we all wear our hearts on our sleeves. And I think by talking to each other about what we're going through and stuff, it really helps us get through the loss of our dad. So I think that was the biggest key, just being open and talking and not bottling things up.
You really do have quite the clan. You're a twin.
Yes.
Is there a competitive rivalry amongst the three of you?
I feel like me and my brothers are all so different. When we stood next to each other, we call ourselves the in-betweeners because I'm so tall. Ryan's pretty short. He's not even that short, just I'm so tall. And then Adam's like the medium one. But we're all so different. We dress differently. We've got different lives. So I don't say we're very supportive of each other. When it comes to paddle though, because Ryan's been playing a lot of paddle.
Oh yeah, like, that surely he's got to be quite...
Yeah, that's a competition.
Who's better?
I would say me. I've got a few more games in than Ryan, but he'll say otherwise. But I know I've got the edge. And Adam's not played yet, because obviously Adam's got so much going on at the minute. He's obviously doing Strictly Come Dancing. And he's also struggling. He's got a little bit of arthritis at the minute, which isn't great at all. But so he's not managed to get some games in. But I think I would say I'm the most competitive against Ryan, more so. We used to call Adam the fencer. Adam kind of sits in the middle. But me and Ryan, yeah, we're always quite competitive. But in a good way, we support each other as well.
Friendly competition is good, right? You've got to have it. And it pushes you to be better.
Oh, 100%. I think with me and the boys, like, obviously, all the paddle lot, we're all talking about rankings all the time. Who's the best in this and everything else?
See, that's where I've messed up, because there's all this sort of Playtomic rankings and that. I put myself as like beginner, and now my ranking is like rock bottom.
Yeah.
So I'd never get a game against someone like you, would I?
Well, I'm only I'm a 2.01, which isn't like really high, but I did the same. I started off dead low, but then I've worked my way up, where some people go in and they put themselves as a 3.5, and then
they get squashed.
Yeah. They get exposed.
Annihilated.
So I think you just gotta give yourself a fair ranking.
You're also an uncle. So yes. Both brothers have kids.
Yep.
In that sense, do you feel like there's an element of they've moved forward and they've already done that part of life? Or do you enjoy?
Well, I turned 35 this year, about a month ago. And now Adam is obviously my twin. And he's been with his wife for like 11 years.
Wow.
And he's got two kids. And they're like the perfect cereal box family. You could say there is pressure on me to kind of be settled down and meet someone. But I just don't think that you can kind of compare yourself to other people.
No.
And I really don't. And I don't think like there's a timeline on anything anymore. I think it's kind of a little bit old school to think, oh, you've got to be married by this time and this and that. The world's changing now. And I'm so comfortable with the life that I'm living because I'm just content with myself and I'm not in a race. And I think, of course, I'd like the idea of having kids at some point, but first I need to fall in love. And I think that's step one. And then obviously everything else will follow. But yeah, I don't really feel the pressure.
Kind of cool being an uncle though.
Being an uncle is the best job in the world. You get to love all the different personalities, but then you also get to give them back as well.
Leave that right there at home.
It's a tough job, parenting. Like, I've been on holiday with Adam Cavalier before, and they don't sit still. They're just like constantly running around. So yeah, I don't envy them in that sense, but I reckon I'll have my turn one day.
Let's talk about Love Island.
Yes.
Was it 2016?
2016.
That's a way off. Right, Love Island, it's a funny one. You get a lot of people going in there and they come out and they cash in. You're clearly an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Was it a business decision?
Do you know what? It was. I kind of justified it at the time because I had the social PR, which was just started.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going on there to boost the profile of my business. But at the end of the day, I always wanted to do TV. I always wanted to be in the limelight. I felt like it was in my blood, so to speak. And I never could get away with doing it because Ryan and Adam were serious actors at the time. And I got multiple different offers to do like Big Brother and X on the Beach. And I always had to turn it down. But when Love Island came about, it just came at the right time. And I felt like, do you know what? If anything, it's going to boost the social PR because I'll get a lot of contacts from it and everything else. But I went on there and I just loved it. Like, I loved the whole experience. It was difficult at times, but going to a villa for 6 weeks, right, with beautiful people, your food all being cooked for you, like no phones, no time, no stress. It was just, looking back, one of the best experiences of my life.
I was going to say, it sounds like the dream. You're really selling it to me, Scott.
The only thing that's difficult, though, is you actually genuinely fall for people in there. So I fell for this girl in there. And then it's their mission to break you up. And that is a head banger.
Ooh.
Like every week, they're trying to basically go, right, how can I send the perfect type in to try and break these two up? And that was difficult. You know what you're signing up for, don't you? And the show, even to this day, I mean, I can't break away from being Scott from Love Island. Even to this day, everywhere I go, Scott from Love Island. I've done different things. I'm a businessman and everything else, but the power of that show. But at the same time, it opens up so many doors for me in business, and I'm still using that kind of platform.
Do you mind being associated with it? Because a lot of people come out and they try and cut ties instantly.
Do you know what? We obviously manage talent from Love Island, and the first thing that we try and do is try and move them away from that show,
Yeah.
which I think is part of it. And I tried to do that with myself as well. However, I think now, because I feel like I'm through the other side, so for a long period of time, yes, I tried to break away from being associated to Love Island and prove myself in other elements, like as being a businessman, as being an influencer for self-development now. And because I feel like I'm confident in my own skin and that I've done enough of other stuff, I don't mind talking about it now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's almost like I moved on. It's like, for example, I don't know, Molly May, she's kind of moved on from the show now. So she can probably like look back and go, yeah, it's a great part of my life. But if that's all you're known for, then yeah, I can understand why you kind of need to shake that off. So I think it's part of the process of trying to...
It's part of the process of self-development.
It's showing the world that you are more than just a show.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've managed
100%.
To do now.
Now, a lot of people do go on there and they come out and they just cash in on club appearances, these big brand deals. Were you at a point in your life where you were still drinking and you did all of that?
Yeah, so when I came out of Love Island, I was still drinking. I was still doing the nightclub PAs and stuff. I was trying to calm down a little bit. But my life didn't really change that much, if I'm honest, because being around nightclubs, going to PAs, that's what I did for a living anyway. But I was about 27, 28, so I was at the point where I kind of needed to grow up a little bit. So I was very much on my journey. But to anyone listening to this, going sober, by the way, is not, it wasn't just that one moment and that was it. It took me so many lows, so many rock bottoms, so many Monday mornings turning up to the gym hungover, beating myself up to get to that point. So I don't want it to be like, oh, I had one bad day and that was it.
Yeah.
It was so many moments of going, Scott, man, you can't do this anymore. And I knew for years that I needed to change, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't find the strength. And it was that one defining moment where that was it, where you just kind of knew. And my biggest advice to anybody is don't wait for it to get to rock bottom to make a lifestyle change. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of people, when they make big changes in life, they wait for that defining moment or that rock bottom moment. Whereas I wish I listened to my gut a lot earlier, like, Scott, you need to change now. I had so many lows, so many hangovers, so many moments where I should have maybe stopped, but I just let it get to...
So now you are completely teetotal, is that correct?
Yeah, so basically I did 12 months sober in 2020, right? Yeah. Then I thought, I don't want to be the boring sober guy. So I started drinking again for the last 2 years, like 21 and 22. And then I realized I went, every time I drank, the lows were just like this, like, because I was so used to being like super like energetic, productive. I was just like, these lows just don't work for me. So that's when I decided in December last year, I'm not going to drink. And this time it's going to be for good. And I think that was a different change in mindset.
That is huge. You've got the tattoo balance tattooed on your arm. Do you believe it's possible to achieve balance with your personality?
Oh, good question. So basically, people said to me, Scott, why can't you just have a couple of drinks? I was like, yeah, I can. So I can go to a restaurant, have a couple of drinks, but I get nothing out of it. Literally, I go home going, that was a waste of time. So what I realized, when I realized that, like the kind of light bulb moment, I was like, I don't drink for the taste of it. I don't drink for that kind of chill feeling. I want to get drunk. And that's where the problem came for me. So I thought, if I can't enjoy it at that point, then maybe it's just not for me. And you know what? I've decided now that I'm not drinking for good because I think it changes my mindset around it. Instead of like going, I'm not drinking for a period of time, I don't actually develop social skills. I don't develop certain skills because I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to get through this year and I'll be drinking again. Whereas now, when I say I'm not drinking for good, I know that I have to pick up certain life skills, and that's the difference. And you never know, listen, for me, the reason why, the main reason I stopped drinking is because I want to get to the top of whatever I'm doing. I want to achieve greatness. I want to be really successful and I want to reach my potential because I can feel that in my stomach. You know, you can feel that kind of...
Yeah.
That
the fire.
Yeah, the fire.
The hunger. It's almost like you've been reborn. In Olympic sport, right? Yeah. You can kind of compare it in the craziest way. So we have this huge high, you have the pinnacle, you have the moment you've been dreaming of, and then you do it, and that's it. It's back to just everyday, mundane life. So there is an element of that cliff edge, and it's turning yourself around. So the way I speak about it is I say I'm living out two dreams, because what I'm doing now is completely different to what I did before. Mm. And not a lot of people see it like that. They have that high, they have that moment, they have that elation, and then what? It's like a lost void. So your scenario with the alcohol and the drinking, it's almost as if you've picked yourself back up and you're a totally different person. You know, like the two extremes, the level of it.
Yeah.
It's comparable.
There's that meme where they say, why are all the ex-party boys and girls gone from dancing around kitchens to climbing mountains Like, it does seem to be those people who've got that kind of all or nothing mentality that kind of, and I think for me, it's like trying to find that balance where I don't burn out as well, because I'm constantly active, I'm constantly...
That's what I was going to say. How do you manage that balance? Because it sounds extremely full on. You've got a lot of different strands you're juggling.
I think it's just making sure now that I don't feel guilty about taking time off. I don't, because I think for me, because, I don't know, you listen to all this stuff about hustle culture and you've got to be up at 5 a.m, you've got to be doing this, to be successful. I think it's, for me, it's like scheduling time now where I just do things that are just for me, whether it's playing paddle, going on a dog walk, just, I love a steaming sauna session. That's my favourite thing to do.
I love a little sauna.
Do you know what I mean? Like, making sure that I have those clean breaks where I just recalibrate and re-energise and do stuff that's just for me. And I think that's the biggest difference in the old Scott, where it'd be like either partying all the time or working all the time. It's just about finding that middle ground.
Talk to me about your routine now, though, and how you actually find that balance and carve out that time for you.
Right, so my routine, I usually wake up around 5:30. It was 5 a.m., but there's a big difference between that 5:30 and 5 a.m.
Scott, that is really early, you have to admit.
Yeah, it is, but I like to wake up early because that's the time that's just for me. So okay. I wake up in the morning, I try to read, journal, do a bit of meditation. By the way, it's not all the time, I'm not perfect, but that's what I try to do, and that's a good start of the day for me. Then I'll get to the gym for about 6:20 with the boys. We're always in there. And then I might play paddle around 7:30. And then I've done all that before 9 o'clock. Oh, I have to take my dog for a walk as well. So I've done a lot before the day starts.
A lot of different things going on here.
But honestly, like for me, that is my time. And the fact that I can do all that stuff before the rest of the world is even up, it means that when I do go into my day, I feel like I've already done stuff for me. I go into my meetings and stuff. And I said this the other day in the gym, once I've done a big session in the gym, honestly, that is often the hardest part of my day. Because if you put yourself through that, and like, because we lift heavy and we train hard, it's almost like anything else after that feels a bit of a breeze.
It's like you're an athlete.
Well, no, you just feel like you've, it's so good.
Do you feel like an athlete? Do you
no, have not, that? Not at all, no.
But an element of that mindset is really evident in your planning, in your day.
Yeah, it's just my medicine. If I've trained, I just automatically feel more confident. I feel like I've accomplished something. And it means that if I get any kind of dramas in the day or any problems, like, Scott, you've just tried to bench this or you just lifted this morning, you can deal with anything that comes your way. And I think, I used to think training was just for how I physically looked because I wanted to look good. But what I realised more than anything now is for my mental health. It's like my medicine.
Yeah.
And I get so much out of it, more than running, even playing paddle. Like, strength training is key for me. I try to literally get some chill time in. Like, from 6 o'clock, I'll either book in like a sports massage, a steamer, sauna. Don't get me wrong, sometimes I find it difficult to put my phone down after working hours because obviously I run different businesses. But I try to get to that point in the evening where I'm literally off my phone for a good, like, solid 2-3 hours.
Wowza. And then during the day, you are juggling a multitude of businesses. So Love Island, did your profile shoot up?
Oh yeah, it did. I mean, overnight, I had more followers than both my brothers, and both my brothers have been on soaps all their lives. They were on Coronation Street, Emmerdale, and I literally did one show and I doubled their followers.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was about, I think I came out with like 700,000 followers, like literally from one show, which was
pretty
crazy.
That's wild. I feel like that doesn't happen anymore.
No, well, it's not as much, but then after that, they used to get millions. But
yeah,
now, like the followers are now slowing down. But anyway, it was a massive platform for me. I've been using it ever since now to like leverage my businesses, and I've created Food Thoughts, which is a wellness community now, and we provide like nutri coaches and guidance on food, nutrition, lifestyle, everything that's kind of an extension of me. And then the social PR is, we manage talent now, so we manage Love Islanders, we work with influencers, and it's basically again a great business that sits so much in line with everything that I'm doing in life anyway, almost an extension of me.
So do you enjoy working on those projects because it's fueling everything you believe in?
Yeah, so for me, business is tough. If anyone tells you it's not, they're lying.
Yeah.
It really is difficult, especially in the current climate.
It's stressful as well.
It's so stressful. But what I've realised is I'm happiest when I'm doing what I do best. I am not the guy who should be sat there talking about finances and KPIs and everything else. Like, what I'm really good at is connecting people to places, to brands, networking, bringing in new business, motivating people, inspiring other people to join Food for Thoughts and everything else. And that's when I'm happiest. So what I've really got to try and learn to do is delegate. those other areas of the business, the people who are better than me. And it can be difficult sometimes because you have to let go of certain elements of what you're doing.
Do you find that hard?
I do find it difficult because I think I've learned that now I am a little bit of a control freak. But at the same time, it's all about finding the right people. And for me, I just want to be surrounded by driven, ambitious people. And that is the key for me, like having those kind of people around me, because I can't do everything. I've got three businesses. I've got the social PR, Food Thoughts, and then obviously my personal brand, which is like the podcast and everything else. So I need good people around me in order to allow me to do these things.
As well as do all of the fun things as well.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
There is a lot going on. Talk to me about triathlon.
Ooh.
That's a new strand. We've spoken a lot about paddle, but what are the other outlets that you use for you?
British Triathlon ended up sponsoring my podcast, and it was the perfect partnership because my podcast is all about learning as I go. It's all about learning something new. Mm-hmm. And obviously, on this sobriety journey I'm on, I'm always looking for that natural buzz, something that's going to take me out of my comfort zone. You're always looking for that same kind of...
That natural high.
Yeah. So I thought, I'll take this on. I've never done like anything to do with swimming or even been on a road bike before. And I knew I was a naturally good runner. So I thought, let's give it a go. And honestly, it's one of the best things I've done. Probably the highlight of this year for me. When I completed that sprint triathlon.
What's a sprint triathlon for those listening that don't know?
So a sprint triathlon is a 750 meter swim.
Yep.
Followed by a 20K bike ride. So you jump straight on your bike and then a 5K run.
Oh, nice. Punchy.
Yeah, it's punchy quick. Because I'm naturally skinny, right? So I'm naturally really slim. If I do too much cardio,
yeah.
I end up looking like ET.
Right.
So there's a reason, there's a logic behind the madness that I thought, you know what? That's the perfect distance for me. First of all, to get into it and experience something new. But then also, it's not going to kind of like deplete all the muscle mass that I've worked so hard to try and build up over the years.
Every day at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
You're absolute savage.
But
it seems to be working.
Well, I'm trying.
You're looking in good nick.
I'm trying. But that feeling, though, when I completed that race, it was like euphoria. It's just because there's so many people there. You feel like a proper athlete. You've got the tri suit on. You've got the swimsuit on. You've got a road bike. You just feel like a proper athlete. I'm definitely going to be looking at doing my next one as well.
Have you done marathons?
I haven't. Again, I wouldn't do a marathon. Because if I do 26 miles of running, I'm going to deplete.
You're going to melt.
I'm going to go like this. But I'm really good at running. So I did my 5K run on the triathlon in 20 minutes flat, which is amazing.
That is very, very punchy time.
After I've done all the other stuff. And I think that was like the 20th fastest time in the running. So I was really proud of that.
Too right. That's incredible. I need to work on the 5K time. I've been doing longer stints, half marathons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of marathons coming up, so.
Right.
I'm not a marathon runner, so yeah. Need to get on that.
Do you know when we talked before about your kind of like defining moments as an Olympian?
Yeah.
What was your defining moment?
As an Olympian? I'd say it wasn't in the Olympics. I would say it was in the X Games, and I was the first woman in the world to land a double. So for me, it wasn't the Olympics. It was a moment outside of
what's
that.
A double,
like going upside down twice.
Wow. Oh wow. I need to watch. You need to send me some of these videos.
I'll send you some clips. Scott, we are on the Monday Mile podcast.
Yeah.
So that does mean we do have to ask you about your relationship with Monday, the start of the week.
Okay.
Do you like a Monday?
Oh, do you know what, this is a question I always ask myself a lot of the times. I do dread Mondays a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised at that based on the sort of prowess in the routine you've got going on.
But the thing is, though, I am juggling a lot.
Yeah, it's spinning plates. I see that.
And I've got a business coach, and I ask him all the time, I don't look forward to Mondays. He says, I look forward to Mondays. I love it. I've got friends who, I'm like, it seems like a lot when it comes back around. But I think, again, it comes down to time management and organisation.
Yeah.
Like, when I do my Sunday night to-do list, when I've kind of pre-planned a little bit, my Mondays feel a lot smoother and slicker. But I think sometimes if I'm not organised, my worst trait is my time management. Not that I'm not always working and everything else, but sometimes I can be a bit of a busy fool.
Yeah.
Whereas what I'm really working on now is just organisation, structure, and also just being a little bit kinder to myself. Like, yeah. I think Mondays come around, I think I move mountains, I need to take over the world. When that's a fact, I go, Monday's just another day to start working on your goals and moving the needle a little bit further. Where sometimes I put a lot of pressure on Mondays being this big day where I need to take over the world, where in actual fact, it's just another day.
It's just another day.
Yeah, and I think It's just a mindset shift, and I think sometimes I put too much pressure on myself.
Talk to me about that cramming in, because I felt that. I could feel it in your voice, and I can really connect and relate to that, because I'm a hound for that sometimes. It's like, I'm going to do this at 6 till 7, and at 7:30, I'll be doing something else, and I can ram that in there, and then I'm going to do my boxing as well, and it's like, ugh! But then you catch yourself in a situation where you're not actually enjoying each moment, because you're focusing on getting to the next.
Everything's a means to an end. I live my life a means to an end, and I've noticed it so much. I'm doing some amazing stuff. I did a track day the other day with Aston Martin and Peroni, and it's like one of my dream jobs, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember not being fully present. And I think that's the story of my life. I'm not always fully present. And if I'm not careful, life is going to pass me by. And I think you take on so much stuff because, yes, it's all exciting, but if you're not there to fully enjoy it, like mentally, then that's the problem.
So, yeah, then you're almost better off not doing it. I've caught myself in that situation where I like want to get a surf in, or actually there's a driving day I might be doing soon, and I want to do it, but I don't want to go and be worried by the fact that I've got to leave early to get to the next thing. So I think time management and carving out time for the things you love is so important.
100%. I'm a little bit of a yes man sometimes, like, because I want to make the most of every opportunity that comes my way. And
I'm connecting with you, Scott. I feel you.
It's the power of saying no, right? Which is difficult. And I think the most successful people in life, especially entrepreneurs, they are so smart and clever with their time. And they won't waste their time on things that either don't make them happy or are not kind of going to move the needle on what they're really focused on. And I think sometimes it's about working smart, not working hard. And that's the bit where I'm trying to kind of master. And hopefully, if I do master that, I look forward to my Mondays a little bit more, and I can be a lot more present in what I'm doing.
Some serious delegation needs to go down.
Yeah.
We'll check in. We'll check in a year's time and see how that's gone.
Yeah.
I reckon that 1 hour paddle is going to be 2 in the mornings.
Oh, well, to be honest, playing 1 hour paddle is a bit of a nightmare. It's not long enough. You can never finish your game. It's got to be 90 minutes.
We do have a game to get to.
Yes.
We are 4 minutes past being late for being on court, and I hate being late. However, we do have one last question. Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you can share with our listeners to help them on their sobriety journey? We're going to go there.
So I would say, and I mentioned this earlier, this is definitely a quote that's changed my whole life. And I used to listen to it all the time. It's from Denzel Washington. And it's, to achieve something you never had, you have to do something you've never done. So I kept asking myself all the time, like, Scott, should I stop drinking? Should I break away from the crowd? Should I do something different? And I was so scared to do it. But at the same time, I kept getting the same results by doing what I was doing anyway. And it wasn't until I made that big kind of commitment to self to do something that I've never done before. And I achieved so much. I achieved greatness, in my opinion. I got to where I was supposed to be. And I think sometimes you need to listen to that little voice in your head or that little feeling in your stomach and just take that first step and do something you've never done before.
It's the feeling, isn't it?
100%.
Monday Mile listeners, I really, really hope you enjoyed that one. Scott Thomas, I think there's some huge takeaways in that, from sobriety to business to management. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to it, but we do have a court to get onto.
Yes.
Should we go and play a little bit of paddle?
Let's do it.
Let's
go. We're not friends on the court, though. You do know that, don't you?
Excuse me, I'm going to be on your team.
Oh, okay.
It's a team game, right?
All right. I'm playing on the right, though, right?
Oh, what? I want to go on the right. That's not fair.
I love the way you're just literally looking at it.
No.
It's not normal that I turn the right.
Okay, we'll have...
Are you a lefty?
We'll balance it out. Balance.
Right, okay. I like it.
Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Make sure you do subscribe. The audio will be dropping at 1 a.m. every single Monday. So for the early risers, you know what to do. Enjoy this on your Monday morning commute. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap.
Woo! Cheers!